disclaimer. The following broadcast gives a true and honest account of the events described, and all evidence and details herein are solely factual. What you are about to hear is real and may disturb you. Caution is strongly advised. Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
The following subject has taken me almost 12 months to research and investigate. The subject matter has taken me down many rabbit holes and dead-end alleys of disinformation, but I have finally arrived at a point where I can share the evidence and facts that I have found with you all. There are a lot of details and moving parts to this case, which is why we made the decision to split this into a multiple-part series. Tonight is the final part of our trilogy. If you enjoy what you hear and you'd like to support us, please consider heading over to patreon.com/deadsouls and donating to our research and investigations. Also, give us a follow on Instagram. Just search Dead Souls Podcast and we'll come up. Thank you. Chapter 3: The Sons of Sam. In the previous two episodes, we discussed the murder of Arliss Perry in a Stanford University church, as well as the inner working of a British turned international cult named the Process Church of the Final Judgment. Two seemingly unrelated subjects. So let's continue with that path tonight. In the summer of 1976, New York City was thrown into a state of terror. It was already labelled Fear City by police and press at the time due to its sky-high crime rate. The city was on the verge of bankruptcy with a staggering $10 billion debt and with Mayor Abraham Beame slashing the number of police in the city by over 5,000 men with the aim of saving money, the city slipped further into crime and despair. It was the perfect climate for chaos, the perfect time for a serial murderer. A madman was on the loose, wandering the streets and killing people at random. This was a killer who loved publicity and sent vicious, taunting letters to the police and media. Each one was signed with the moniker, "The Son of Sam." When fate, and indeed the authorities, finally caught up with the killer, he was revealed to be a chubby introvert by the name of David Berkowitz. A postal worker who shot and killed people at random, ordered to by the voice of Satan through his neighbour's dog. An extraordinary and somewhat fantastic claim from a man whom the state deemed legally sane. The man who would become the self-professed Son of Sam was born Richard David Falco on June 1, 1953. His mother, Betty Broder, had previously been married to a man named Tony Falco, but when he left her for another woman, she began a relationship with a married man named Joseph Kleinman. Tony already had a child named Rosalyn, a girl, and when Kleinman found out that she was pregnant again, he pressured her to give up the baby. Kleinman also forbade Betty from giving the child his surname, which is why she gave the child her former husband's last name of Falco. Shortly after birth, Richard was adopted by a middle-aged couple from the Bronx named Nathan and Pearl Berkowitz. The Berkowitzes owned a hardware store which occupied a large portion of Nathan's time, which is why he was never close to his adopted son David. Nathan would later consider the adoption to be a huge mistake. As David was her only child, Pearl was extremely close and even somewhat suffocating to the boy. She also indulged David and let him get away with things that he shouldn't have. David would develop to be a difficult child as a result. He was hyperactive, mischievous, and troublesome. He was also a bulky child, and he quickly learned that he could use his size to his advantage, and as a result lorded over the other children in his school year and peer group. David showed little to no interest in school, and through a combination of truancy and feigned illnesses, he would miss a lot. When he was 7 years old, David was hit by a car and he suffered head injuries. It's not clear, however, whether these head injuries resulted in any long-term effects or changes to David's behaviours. Soon after the accident, David started to show signs of a fascination with fire and he began burning bugs, small animals, and various other items before advancing to starting fires around his home neighbourhood with larger things. This didn't bring him to the attention of authorities as it should have, though. His adoptive parents would take him to see a psychotherapist when he was 14 instead, in an attempt to fix David's behaviours. That same year, David's life was turned upside down when his adopted mother Pearl passed away. She had been fighting breast cancer for almost 2 years, and finally lost her battle in the autumn of 1967. David had a close relationship with Pearl, and he was shocked to watch her decline as she went through chemotherapy treatments. Her death dealt a crushing blow to David. In the year after his mother's death, David became increasingly introverted, and his schoolwork suffered drastically as he fell into a dark depression. He became increasingly alone in the world. He had little to no relationship with his father, and things worsened when his father would remarry. David's new stepmother was even more distant than his father, and the couple would soon relocate to Boynton Beach near Miami, Florida, without David, who was by now old enough to live alone. David's isolation was complete, and with no friends and no family connection, he created a fantasy world in his head in order to cope with his loneliness. In 1971, at the age of 18, David would join the army, and following basic training, he was sent to Korea. He seemed to respond well to the discipline that it provided, and he would soon train as a marksman, becoming a good shot. In 1974, he was honorably discharged. After leaving the army, David returned to New York, where he was once again completely alone. He used money that he saved during his army years to rent an apartment in the Bronx, and took classes at Bronx Community College. David's fellow students and the school administration remember David at this point as being an angry and argumentative man who would aggressively disassociate himself from others. He was very quiet, and Berkowitz quickly came to the attention of both his neighbors and the local police department. He was known to instigate petty disputes and escalate them with personal threats. David Berkowitz around this time also developed a fascination with fire, and over the next 3 years he set more than 1,500 fires around New York City and its surrounding boroughs. David recorded the details of each of the fires he started in his personal journal and began referring to himself as the Phantom of the Bronx. The firelighting gave David a sense of power, a control that he couldn't find anywhere else in his life. In finding this power, David had a purpose, and for the first time in his life, his existence had a meaning. He had become someone. He wanted more power, more control, more authority. In 1975, David Berkowitz found that extra level of power that he had been craving. He developed another fascination, along with his firelighting. David found Satan and the occult after reading the Satanic Bible by Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan. David became convinced that he was being controlled by evil spirits, but that was okay, as he had this unlimited power alongside it. In November 1975, David Berkowitz wrote a letter to his father. In the letter he said, "It's cold and gloomy here in New York City, but that's okay because the weather fits my mood. It's gloomy, Dad. The world is getting dark now." Shortly after writing this letter, on Christmas Eve, David took a hunting knife with the aim to satisfy his bloodlust. His first victim was a Hispanic woman coming out of a grocery store. Berkowitz stabbed her several times before she managed to fight him off and run away. He then attacked a 15-year-old high school sophomore by the name of Michelle Foreman on a bridge near Dreiser Loop. She also managed to escape Berkowitz, even though she had been stabbed 6 times and would be hospitalized for her wounds for up to a week. Berkowitz would escape justice, however. Berkowitz relocated to a rental house in Yonkers, New York, in January 1976, where his landlord kept a German Shepherd dog, which barked incessantly. At the time, Berkowitz was working as a night shift security guard. He later recalled that the constant barking from his landlord's dog almost caused him to take his own life. David suffered the barking for 3 months, but the noise became too much for him, and he moved to a different apartment at 35 Pine Street, although still in Yonkers. At this time, Berkowitz now frequented the nearby Untermeyer Park during his free evenings, where he was part of a group of people who shared the same interests and beliefs as David. The group called themselves the Children. The Children were a satanic group. I'm reluctant to call them a cult given their fractured and disorganized nature, but they were a satanic group nonetheless. They performed rituals, chanting, and animal sacrifices, with the aid of a variety of narcotics to support their cause and beliefs. It's unclear who, if anyone, was considered a leader of this group, but they numbered around 20 to 25 or so individuals, mostly male, with members who had founded the group after the collapse of the Process Church of the Final Judgment. On July 29, 1976, Berkowitz left his apartment via the fire escape shortly before 1 a.m. He had in his possession a .44 special caliber Bulldog revolver handgun in a paper bag. He had one thing on his mind. Or at least so the official police narrative goes. By July 31st, 1977, just a year later, David Berkowitz had supposedly killed 6 people and wounded a further 9, not including his previous stabbings, all with his .44 caliber handgun. Late at night, in the darkness across 3 of New York's 5 boroughs. He would be apprehended by the police a few weeks after his final attack on August the 10th, 1977. Again, at least that's the official story that was fed to the world and media by the New York police, and the official story that dealt Berkowitz's 6 life sentences in court. But questions and significant evidence remained. Firstly, Berkowitz had left a letter at one of the murder scenes in April 1977. The letter read as thus.
I am deeply hurt by your calling me a Weeman hater. I am not, but I am a monster. I am the son of Sam. I am a little brat. When Father Sam gets drunk, he gets mean. He beats his family. Sometimes he ties me up to the back of the house. Other times he locks me in the garage. Sam loves to drink blood. Go out and kill, commands Father Sam. Behind our house, some rest. Mostly young, raped and slaughtered. Their blood drained. Just bones now. Papa Sam keeps me locked in the attic, too. I can't get out, but I look out the attic window and watch the world go by. I feel like an outsider. I am on a different wavelength than everybody else. Programmed to kill. However, to stop me, you must kill me. Attention all police. Shoot me first. Shoot to kill, or else. Keep out of my way, or you will die. Papa Sam is old now. He needs some blood to preserve his youth. He has had too many heart attacks. Too many heart attacks. Ugh, me hoot, it hurts, sonny boy. I miss my pretty princess most of all. She's resting in Our Lady's house, but I'll see her soon. I am the monster, Beelzebub, the chubby behemoth. I love to hunt, prowling the streets looking for fair game, tasty meat. The Weemun of Queens are the prettiest of all. I must be the water they drink. I live for the hunt, my life. Blood for Papa. Mr. Borelli, sir, I don't want to kill anymore. No, sir, no more, but I must. Honor thy father. I want to make love to the world. I love people. I don't belong on earth. Return me to Yahoos, to the people of Queens. I love you, and I want to wish all of you a happy Easter. May God bless you in this life and in the next. And for now, I say goodbye and good night. Police, let me haunt you with these words. I'll be back. I'll be back. to be interpreted as bang, 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 ugh. You're in murder, Mr. Monster.
This letter was the now infamous Son of Sam letter. It was addressed to NYPD Captain Joseph Borelli, and it contained a number of very revealing facts and evidence. Take specific note at this point of reference to Papa Sam, too many heart attacks, and the Son of Sam being locked in the attic. Media hysteria was also at its peak during Berkowitz's ephemeral killing spree. The whole city of New York was in a state of mass panic, and firearm sales went through the roof as people sought to protect themselves at all costs. Berkowitz issued a second letter in May 1977. He mailed it from Englewood in New Jersey to New York's most prominent crime writer, New York Times columnist Jimmy Breslin. The second letter reads as the following.
Hello from the gutters of NYC, which are filled with dog manure, vomit, stale wine, urine, and blood. Hello from the sewers of NYC, which swallow up these delicacies when they are washed away by the sweeper trucks. Hello from the cracks in the sidewalks of NYC, and from the ants that dwell in these cracks and feed on the dried blood of the dead that has seeped into these cracks. JB, I'm just dropping you a line to let you know that I appreciate your interest in those recent and horrendous .44 caliber killings. I also want to tell you that I read your column daily, and I find it quite informative. Tell me, Jim, what will you have for July 29th? You can forget about me if you like, because I don't care for publicity. However, you must not forget Donna Loria. You cannot let the people forget her either. She was a very, very sweet girl, but Sam is a thirsty lad, and he won't let me stop killing until he gets his fill of blood. Mr. Breslin, sir, don't think that because you haven't heard from me for a while that I went to sleep. No, rather, I am still here, like a spirit roaming the night, thirsty, hungry, seldom stopping to rest, anxious to please Sam. I love my work. Now, the void has been filled. Perhaps we shall meet face to face someday, or perhaps I will be blown away by cops with smoking 38s. Whatever. If I shall be fortunate enough to meet you, I will tell you all about Sam if you like, and I will introduce you to him. His name is Sam the Terrible. Not knowing what the future holds, I shall say farewell, and I will see you at the next job. Or should I say, you will see my handiwork at the next job. Remember, Ms. Loria. Thank you. In their blood and from the gutter, Sam's creation, .44 caliber. Here are some names to help you along. Forward them to the inspector for use by the NCIC. The Duke of Death, the Wicked King Wicker, the 22 Disciples of Hell, John Wheaties, rapist and suffocator of young girls. P.S. J.B., please inform all the detectives working the slaying to remain. P.S. J.B., please inform all the detectives working the case that I wish them the best of luck. Keep them digging, drive on, think positive, get off your butts, knock on coffins, etc. Upon my capture, I promise to buy all the guys working on the case a new pair of shoes, if I can get up the money. Son of Sam.
In the second letter, much like the first that Berkowitz had issued, there were significant clues and information regarding the attacks. But the letters didn't point to only one man, or just Berkowitz, like the police had said at the time. John Wheaties, the rapist and suffocator of young girls, for example, and also the 22 Disciples of Hell. Both of these references gave crystal clear information regarding the killer or killers. John Wheaties, for example, was the nickname of a close friend of David Berkowitz, a man by the name of John Wheat Carr. John Wheat Carr lived in a house right behind David Berkowitz's apartment building, a house that he shared with his father Sam Carr, brother Michael Carr, and Sam's German Shepherd dog who would bark incessantly. After Berkowitz's arrest in 1977, he stated that he was commanded by a 6,000-year-old demon that was talking to him through a barking dog. This dog was the pet of Sam Carr, John and Michael Carr's father. After his arrest, Berkowitz wrote a letter to the Carr family from prison in which he referred to Sam Carr as Sam My Lord and Papa God. Sam Carr was known to be a strict disciplinarian towards his family and often, as punishment, kept his sons locked in the attic. His temper meant that he, in his increasing age, had suffered heart trouble and indeed had experienced a number of heart attacks. Sam Carr was of Scottish descent and origin. Michael Carr was the brother of John Carr. He worked in the advertising industry. At the time of the Son of Sam murders, Michael was known to be selling drugs, involved in organized crime, and was a member of the Children Satanic Cult, much like his brother John and 22 other disciples of hell, or Satan. The letters clearly tie the three members of the Carr family, their dog, David Berkowitz, and 22 members of the satanic cult, the Children, all together. But the police either failed to identify this or didn't want to pursue the leads any further. In a 1993 prison interview, David Berkowitz claimed that while he was present at all of the Son of Sam killings, he was not the perpetrator who had actually killed the victims. In fact, he alleged, members of the Children made up a small gang of shooters, and Berkowitz claimed that he was just the lookout. Berkowitz also stated that he had met Michael Carr at a house party in 1975. They became fast friends, and Michael Carr eventually introduced Berkowitz to a group that he was a member of who worshipped the devil and carried out rituals and animal sacrifices in New York's Untermeyer Park. Through Michael, and indeed the Children, Berkowitz also met John Carr. John Carr had been living in Minot, North Dakota, where he had served in the Air Force until 1974. Following his discharge from the Air Force, he continued to live there, but returned to New York regularly. Berkowitz stated that both John and Michael had been the planners and main perpetrators of the Son of Sam murders. He alleged that the Children were also involved in child pornography and child trafficking, and also offered those that they killed as offerings to Satan. Further, blood spilled as an offering to Satan would give Sam Carr new energy, new life, and support for his ailing heart. John Carr would be found dead at his girlfriend's apartment in Minot of an apparent suicide around 6 months after Berkowitz's arrest. Initially, the suicide by gunshot seemed like a fairly straightforward case for the police. However, a short time later, evidence emerged that the death of John Carr had likely been a murder. Michael Carr died in a suspicious car accident in 1979. There was evidence at the scene of the car crash that indicated that he had been run off the road by another vehicle. Michael had descended deeper into drug and alcohol addiction following the Son of Sam murders and subsequently joined the Church of Scientology. Wheat Carr, the sister of the Carr brothers, confirmed to police years later that her brothers were indeed involved in the occult. The NYPD had formed Operation Omega, which was the most comprehensive investigation in its history in order to bring the Son of Sam killer to justice. Over 300 detectives worked around the clock on a daily cost of $90,000. 45 psychiatrists pored over the haunting letters that Berkowitz was writing, with the general consensus being that he was a paranoid loner who was unable to form relationships, and with connections to the occult and Satan worship. In part one of this three-part series, we discussed the murder of Arliss Perry on the campus of Stanford University in 1974. Well, In 1978, the now convicted Son of Sam killer David Berkowitz sent a written correspondence from prison to Lieutenant Terry Gardner, a deputy sheriff in Ward County, North Dakota. Gardner had been investigating the death of John Carr in Minot, North Dakota. According to the New York Times, Berkowitz sent Gardner a copy of the book The Anatomy of Witchcraft, with the words, "Arliss Perry, hunted, stalked, and slain. Followed to California, Stanford University." This was scrawled inside the margins. He later claimed that he knew who was responsible for the slaying of Arliss Perry, the North Dakota native who hailed from a town close to Minot. You'll recall from part one in this series that Perry, just prior to her marriage and move to California, had attempted to convert a satanic cult from the darkness to the light, as she saw it, and preach Christianity to them. That satanic group was based in Minot. In June of 2018, Santa Clara authorities used DNA from the crime scene to try and identify the killer of Perry, some 44 years after her murder. Officers who originally investigated the murder collected samples of blood and semen from the body of Arliss Perry at the time in 1974. They finally had a match. Officers went to the home of Stephen Blake Crawford to arrest the 72-year-old ex-Stanford University security guard. Crawford had been the guard that locked up the church that night that Arliss Perry was murdered, and also who found the body of Perry. When officers approached Crawford's residence and knocked his door, identifying who they were, Crawford immediately put a gun to his head and killed himself. According to initial published reports, Crawford acted alone and appeared to have no ties with a satanic cult. However, when police officers searched his apartment afterward, they found an item of particular interest: a book titled The Ultimate Evil, written by New York Post investigative reporter Murray Terry. The book chronicles the Son of Sam murders and its links to a possible nationwide secret satanic cult linked to the Process Church of the Final Judgment. The book's initial paragraph details the murder of Arliss Perry. There was also a suicide note left by Crawford sat on a computer table nearby. The note was dated a number of years prior, and officers stated that it indicated that Crawford was expecting and waiting for authorities to eventually track him down, and when they did, he was prepared to kill himself rather than go to jail. The existence of satanic cults seems almost fantasy-like. The image of dark-robed individuals committing obscene acts of evil comes to mind, but evil for evil's sake seems pointless, almost hokey. The prevalence of satanic fear and panic in 1980s and 1990s America ultimately sensationalized the idea of satanic cults to the point of gaining an image of urban legend in current Western culture. But we know that cults do exist. Further, a recent Pew Research study showed that over 490,000 Americans identify as Satanists, which is no small amount. In fact, it's around 1.5% of the US population. Beginning around the same time as the Son of Sam murders, there were a series of child disappearances in the same areas of New York that Berkowitz operated. 7 children disappeared, never to be seen again, between 1972 and 1987, on and around Staten Island. Eventually, the man responsible was caught and convicted in 1988. His name was Andre Rand, a 44-year-old psychiatric hospital orderly, and he was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison for the murder of one of the children. There was insufficient evidence to link him to the other missing children. However, Rand had a history of child abuse and kidnapping young children. At the time of his arrest, Rand was living as a vagrant on the grounds of the Willowbrook State School, a closed psychiatric hospital that had become home to strange rituals, Satan worship, and cult activity in the years since its closure. Locals had stated that the area became dangerous at night and also supported significant drug use. Ex-patients of the hospital had also returned to the derelict building and resumed residency there, perhaps unaware of the setting no longer being their home due to their mental impairments. Regardless, locals knew of Rand and his interest and participation in the occult. It would later emerge that André Rand was a participant in the Children, and also an acquaintance of Robert de Grimston, the founder of the Process Church of the Final Judgment, who now, or at least at the time of the murders and André Rand's arrest, lived on Staten Island. Berkowitz would ultimately prove to be a problem prisoner. He reveled in tormenting other inmates, and because of his difficulty controlling his rage, other inmates mocked him and would call him names, only inflaming his annoyance and anger. On July the 10th, 1979, Berkowitz was attacked by another inmate with a razor. The resulting neck injuries he suffered required 57 stitches. Berkowitz would refuse to identify his attacker, stating that he deserved the punishment he got. After 10 years of confinement, Berkowitz became a born-again Christian. The angry mass killer was converted into an evangelical pacifist, and he absorbed himself in a letter-writing campaign to spread the message of the Bible over the years following. So what does this all mean? Perhaps nothing. I'll let you be the judge. Good night, my friends.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. Visit deathcult.com for more information on how you can help us and support our broadcasts. There you can also find links to our socials, Patreon, and episodes. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.